The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle, streaming radio 24-7. Today, believe it or not, is the 25th of November, 2017. As I tell everyone, we're going to bring this gentleman in the next few minutes, James Graham, our friend here, our stone lifter, and we're going to talk about his new book, and I'll give you that as we get closer and closer to bringing him in. But he, like a lot of people who haven't been on here, and if you haven't heard the show, in the last couple months, we've been doing a lot of things on the whole mental end of life, training, living, relationships. A lot of this is due to a lot of things I've had to redo, I felt, with me and wanted to go after and test. And here's a couple of things we do all the time. I tell everyone to stand up. You can do it sitting down, whatever you want to do. You take a big breath through the nose, so you go out through the mouth, and repeat, I am a winner, I am a champion. I always add something else. Today you can say, I am success. Success, wealth, however you like it. But as I've said, and I've got pro and con on this. Well, you know, I don't know if that stuff works. It does work. But it has to be committed to your subconscious mind. It takes usually 22 days minimum to override a negative phrase or two you have, and I'm sure a lot of us have tons of it, because it doesn't matter. You've been exposed to the world, other people, you hear things. Well, those two phrases alone, you repeat those the minute you get up, do it during the day, and one of the best things to do, I do with a lot of things, repeat things until I fall asleep. That's embedded in your mind, and I'm telling you right now, it's far better to speak to yourself in that fashion than say I'm a loser or I'm a quitter and can't do it. That's too much we hear now, and that's one of the missions here that we are going on full throttle, where we're going to change that dialogue. I'm telling you right now, today I just put up on the FBC blog, you hear me talking about my nieces and nephews all the time. The other day, obviously, Thanksgiving, we were all over my sisters and the two little ones, Maggie and Danny, who are into the sandbags now and all that. Well, their father, Dan, sends me a video the day before, and Dan was up at the gym at school where he's a coach and a teacher. And there's my little niece, who if she's 60 pounds, she's a peanut. But I was told people before how she can jump, just dive right into a handstand and hold it, fall into a wrestler's bridge. They have races at school with the girls and boys. She wins every race. I mean, you ought to hear her play piano, but I'll tell you what, I couldn't believe it. She pulled 100 pounds off the floor, and she used a farmer's walk implement loaded. I put it up today. I mean, I called it Proud Uncle. I'm telling you, man, this kid is amazing. I call her the spider. So, Maggie, I'm real proud of you, and, you know, we're going to talk about you more down the road, I'm sure. Also, too, as I said, FiorelloBarbellCo.com. Don't forget, Winner's Circle. Beat the old age right out of you. I've got 13 videos that you can look at that are minimum 40 minutes long. And if you love old school training, dips, pullovers, heist shrugs, things of that nature, there's enough material on there to last you a year. And if you want video, we can do video, but for $247 for 13 modules, and I'm going to get ready. I'm going to do a 14th one, and we're doing a lot of things with it. So look for that. That's there. Purchase it. Start all over. Also, to donate to the company. We got $25, $50, and $100. Click it. It'll take you through everything right to my PayPal account, in and out. You're done. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff with the Etched in Stone product for men, women, and children. That's on the way, too. And one of the biggest things I'm super proud of is you've seen me write stuff. We've already had authors here that have sent video and been on the show. We are starting. We're in the process of finishing the page. It's called Manly Men's Movement, and it was constructed by Dr. Wong and myself. We feel men have taken it on the chin for way too long, and we're going to get into this more and more. You can go out and look at two articles already out there by myself and Frank Robles. Very interesting stuff, and the young men and young women too. I mean, we want to help everybody out here, and we want people to stop telling you can't do things, and we're going to get into more and more of this before the end of the year, and 18 is going to be a record breaker. So look at that. Go out to motivationmuscle.com/category/podcast. James has been on here one other time. This show will be up tomorrow morning. So we've got two, and hopefully he'll want to do the next 30 years with us like everybody else. We've got it. There's nobody out there like us. I don't care who they are. Nobody does radio like Motivation Muscle and my family that join me all the time. I thank you all for that. Sign up for our newsletter, motivationmuscle.com. It's at the top of the webpage. Hit there. It goes right to the MailChimp account. I believe we've ripped every other piece out, but if you find it anywhere else, it's not going there. So that's the only place you can come in. As I said, we got our pal James Graham on here today, and I'm going to give you a little information on this gentleman. Number one, he's a Highland Games athlete, strong man, and a stone lifter. And now, obviously, he is a writer and an author. And the thing we're going to talk about, and I'm sure we're going to talk about many pieces that go with all this, it's Donald Dinney Uncovered. And if you've been looking at everybody out there, especially on Facebook, I've never, even since last year, I've never seen the popularity of the Dinney Stones unless there's more film. And we'll ask James about that. But it is absolutely breathtaking to see those big pieces of granite coming off the ground on those rings. As I've got the ones from David Horn, you load those up, they literally feel like they're going to rip right through your fingers, believe me. But it is awesome stuff. James, welcome back to the show. It's an honor to have you on, my friend.
It's great to be back, Eric. Thanks very much for the intro.
You're welcome. Anything I missed, put it out there. Websites, anything coming up. And I got a lot to ask you about this book, so take it away, my friend.
Well, the book is it's obviously just come out in the last maybe month, and the reason it came out was that a dear friend called Peter Martin passed away suddenly.
Yep.
And his father had written the Of Stones and Strength book, along with Steve Inverjek.
You got it.
So that was a turning point, as death often is, a terrible way to start off an interview. But then just it put me through a period of time where I wanted to reread emails and things that we'd share together and just mentally revisit stone lifting trips that we'd done together, myself, Martin Jancic, and Peter.
Yep.
And then having read all the old stuff, this idea formulated in my head that some of the things that we talked about and emailed each other about, I should write down and share with other people. And a lot of information that we'd been working on that I just hadn't had time to be published.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the genesis of the book, to bring out the stuff that we talked about that we hadn't seen anywhere else in print.
I think that's awesome, because I'm going to tell you something. I don't think we said this. I had spoken with Peter Martin, well, back and forth with emails, I should say, a number of times, and it was the last week before we lost him when he had the heart attack and came home, and then he just went suddenly on a Friday, because I had Bill Crawford on Saturday, and I was so happy. I said, he sent me some material to read. Nice guy. I'd love to come on your show. I've heard your show. And then I hear what happens, and then I'm going back and forth with Bill, and then we're on the phone before it went on. He said, Eric, I think Peter passed away last night, and Holly is Bill Crawford's wife. She's trying to get verification. I said, man, I had like a lump in my throat. I couldn't believe it. So to make a long story short, yes, we lost him, unfortunately. And I got a note from his daughter, whom I've never, ever even emailed with, let alone spoken a word. And I really appreciated this, James, more. This was one of the nicest things anybody ever did for me, because one thing with podcasting and shows, especially when you're a lone wolf, so to speak, there's an awful lot of back and forth and follow up. And I've told you, you know, a couple people were questioning me today about a person I was supposed to come on, and they didn't show up. And at times it can take it and really push you hard. His daughter got a hold of me and sent me a beautiful note and said, I knew my father was talking to you quite a bit and he was going to come on your show. And I just wanted to let you know personally that we lost Dad. I was like, and I thanked her and everything. And it was one of the nicest things, because not only do I felt for her loss, and I'm sure it still weighs heavy, but I appreciate the courtesy. Because I think that's a thing that is sorely missing in America. I don't know about down under where you are, but I appreciate it. And that's, I know, a little sidebar, but all right. So obviously you guys had to have some great discussions, and I couldn't be happier to hear all this. What, for anyone that doesn't know anything about Donald Denny, because we do have listeners here that maybe they are starting to catch on to Stone Lifters, and we have a lot of younger listeners. Just tell everybody, give them a little bit of the ground floor of who Donald Denny was, where he came from, and how he got involved with the Denny Stones. And then anything else will just keep going, my friend.
Sure. So Donald Denny's life was during the 19th century. He was born in Scotland, and that was the era of the all-round athlete. Yep. People didn't tend to specialize as much. So he started life as a stonemason, as his dad had done. And then during the summer months in Scotland, and they're not very long, by the way, as you'll know.
Yeah.
Yeah. During the summer week in Scotland, he'd then go around and compete in as many Highland Games as he could. Highland Games being a paid professional sport. So go and try and win as much money as he could. And then back to his full-time job as a stonemason. But then over a period of years, he decided that he would become a full-time athlete. That was in this sort of Victorian era where the gentleman athlete was a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he turned to become a full-time athlete, and at that point in time, his performances and skill levels increased so much to the extent that he dominated quite quickly Scotland, and then began to get invitations for Ireland, and then over to the USA, and then back to Scotland, and then start touring as a strongman and a thrower throughout the United Kingdom.
Yep.
And then after that, he upped sticks and went out to what they called the colonies at that time and started touring the world, New Zealand and Australia being the two main ones. Spent a number of years in Australia competing and running businesses, and then unfortunately hit some hard times financially.
Mm-hmm.
And then full circle back to Scotland in his older years, and tried to continue his strongman act, and eventually passed away back in Scotland. So his whole life he was one of the first traveling athletes, all-round athletes, and people say that he won anything from sort of 10,000-11,000 prizes. And became, and the title now sticks with him, the first sporting superstar.
Yeah.
And that's the summation of his sort of public life. This traveling athlete, I wish I knew the American sports stars, but you'd see the sort of David Beckham, whoever it is, imagine Olympic athlete traveling the world.
Yep.
He was a pioneer in that.
Without a doubt, way ahead of his time. There's no doubt about it. And you don't even know if they know it at that point, but they're that good that people want to see these people compete. And I'll tell you one thing, you know, I said this to you, I think it was offline too. The book, obviously, I can't wait till we can get into this momentarily, but because this started when I was telling James, recently, in fact, 2 weeks ago today, I had Charlie Blair Oliphant and his son Lawrence on here. And, you know, this Art Blair Stone stuff, I mean, I know they're the Atlas Stones, but the thing that intrigues me so much which really bothers me here is you don't see a lot of that. Now, Ryan Stewart was on here last week, who's an American strongman, obviously. He was over recently this past summer, lifted the Denny's. He's going after, we talked July, he's going to Iceland. He wants to lay his hands on the Husafell. He wants to go to Dritvik and Latra. And I'm like, if you're over there, you might as well go to Legenstein, too. You need to free that old farmer up out of his grave. So we've been talking a lot about maybe we'd even join one another, but that's a whole other thing. But the thing that Charlie said to me, which was true, is we don't really like that word mainstream, so to speak. But Charlie made a real valid point, because you've seen so much out there this year on the Denny Stones, on the Inverse Stone, you know, and a lot of the guys who've come on here, you know, are very happy that, you know, Motivation here, we're really out pushing stones and sandbags everywhere. I just feel it's a way of life that if you really want to find the core of who you are, you need to get into this stuff. And I'm going to give it right back to you, James. I'm going to make two quick points. You hear people, and you've probably heard it, obviously, with all you've done, well, I don't want to lift stuff like that. And you don't want to insult them and say, well, I don't know if you could anyways, but it might take you a long, long time to do it. But regardless, the one thing I love about stones, sandbags, anything is you can take that and drive it down to the smallest thing you want to lift. Because I can tell you that you know, everybody hears me talking about Danny and Madge, my niece and nephew. When I was over the house the other day for Thanksgiving, yeah, there they are, dusting the 12-pound sandbag, shoulder to shoulder, walking with it, just lifting it up, holding it. I mean, this stuff is something everybody likes to do once they get their hands on it. But the point where I started was, and I'm going to come full circle right now, is this. Charlie said, and he made a point that I never really thought of. He was like, I hope it doesn't go mainstream. I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, we like to get together and lift these things no matter what. I said, I got it. He goes, you start getting federations or you get other people involved in this that really don't know a lot about it, and suddenly we're going to have to do them in a controlled environment. It's not going to be outside anymore, et cetera, et cetera. I totally got it. I would never want to see the Denny's, the Husafell, anything go into a controlled environment like that. It's fine with the rules. It's fine with people there to judge. But let's leave it at that. So take it away, James. Comment on anything, and we'll get fired right into the book now.
Yeah, it's a good point by Charlie. I think we're probably safe to a certain degree in as much as the traditional stones,
yep,
whatever they happen to be in the world, they're not going to move because they're not owned by a single person.
Yep.
So various stately homes, clans, estates own individual stones.
Yep.
And there's no way they're going to give up their history and put it in a gymnasium for everybody to have a go at.
Yeah. I admire that. Go ahead. Yeah.
So as much as maybe new organizations come along and they may want to have a natural stone lifting competition or some rules, and that's something that might happen. You never know.
Yep.
But those traditional stones are going to be in their traditional locations, and that type of thing does not attract mainstream people.
Nah.
People who are prepared to go from New York,
yeah,
East Coast America, and travel to Iceland,
yeah,
and then drive 6 hours to pick up a bit of rock.
Yeah.
That is not a mainstream thing. It never will be.
No.
And you would probably do that in preference to going to a local gymnasium, which might happen to have a half dozen natural stones that you could lift.
Yeah.
They haven't got yet that tradition. You can go along and lift them, and you can add and create a tradition. But those ones that are already out there, they are 200, 500 years ahead of the game.
Yeah.
And they're only going to attract the outliers of their society to come and lift them. And that I think we're safe for that.
Yeah, anyway. No, I agree. And, you know, you mentioned, obviously, of stones and strength. Steve Jeck, our good friend who's on here, is Steve was the one who started me interested in stone lifting. When I watched that DVD of him in Iceland. I'll tell you what, James, I don't know of anything that ever stirred me the way that did, because the first thing I said when I don't even think I was in the 5 minutes of that video, I was like, I'm going to Iceland. And I did twice. You know, not many people, you know, and you know this because, you know, obviously at one point you had lived in Scotland. We kind of might maybe look at it, well, we've done it, we've been there. But you know something? I'm talking coming from America, too. It takes a lot of balls to jump on Iceland Air and go somewhere you've never been. You only know what you've watched. You've got as strong as you possibly feel you can at that point. But the thing is, you don't know what it is until you literally walk up on it. And the next thing you know, it's in your arms, and it's coming off the ground, or it's not. See, that's what I love about Stones more than anything. Yeah, we have bad days, we know, and maybe we overshot the mark, et cetera, et cetera. But really, there's no excuses with Stones. Either you lift it or you don't. You know, in the case of the Husafell or any of the other ones we went over with, you know, the Husafell, it's 50-meter walk around the sheep pen. You might pick it up, but you might only walk 2 feet and drop it, and that's it. So that's what I love about the finality of Stones. You know, other than I wish it didn't, you know, didn't tear a bicep on me, that's neither here nor there. You know, you walk away with a little experience and whatever. But what I guess the point I'm trying to make to everybody, and I'll give it right to you, is this. Because I talk to a lot of people about, you know, they'll ask me about how are you doing, you getting ready to go again and all that. And these aren't people that lift Stones, James, but you know what I like about it? I know it's never going to go mainstream where you're going to see a pile of us from Albany, New York, jump on a plane or drive over to Logan Airport and fly out of Boston, Icelandic Air, okay? I know that. But you know what it is I think intrigues people about this stuff is it's kind of like, it reminds me almost like the Rocky movies. It's kind of like, yep, you can be strong as hell, but we know that doesn't always translate to lifting Stones, because I know from here, Charlie was talking about it, I've got a ton of friends that are huge deadlifters. You go to pull a 220-pound Atlas Stone, they can lap it, and that's about it. It's a different world, okay? And what I'm saying is people enjoy what this stuff is we do. It's fascinating to them whether they can do it or not, because it's like, I don't care who you are, the will, your spirit wants to do things like that, enjoys things like that. So take it away. I've talked enough. But, that you know, I love the finality of a Stone, that's all.
Well, the thing about Stones for me and people I speak to tend to agree is it's a relatable object. So I'm never going to be £1,000 deadlifter, and none of my friends know what £1,000 deadlift looks like. And if you saw a bar with £1,000 on it, it would mean nothing.
Right.
They say, is that heavier than a fridge? I can't relate to that massive weight. But if you walk up and down the local parks or anything and you see a Stone, it's something people can relate to.
Yep.
They've stood on it, kicked it over in their garden, or been unable to move it in their garden. So it's something that's it's a common everyday object that you walk past it, and then if you can lift it, people know.
Yeah.
But that's a very, really heavy object. That's a really awkward thing you did there.
Yep.
I know I could or could not do that. And it's also, there's history to those things. We know that not all people will be able to squat or deadlift £1,000.
Mm-hmm.
But we know from history that through manual labor, that people can lift this. This is a doable thing. It's part of nature. They're everywhere. Men and women can move stones. And that's, I think, why it's a relatable object and people get into it in a way that they don't when they watch, say, barbell sports often.
Yeah.
If you're into sports and you like the barbells, then you can understand that, relate to it. The weights and poundages make sense to you, and it draws you in emotionally, and you can have that visualization. I want 6 plates on the bar. I want 8 plates on the bar.
Yeah.
But not everybody can do that. But everybody who's in the world has walked past a Stone at some point, and they know that that's a challenge there.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it's relatable.
I do too. I think it's awesome. Let's talk a little bit about the book for sure, because I really want to get this out to everybody who hasn't heard about it or is wondering what it is. obviously, you know, Peter Martin was very instrumental in this. Martin, I mean, just exceptional people. So now that you and Martin pretty much now are carrying the torch, I know Martin wrote the foreword because I went out and read. What do you feel? What you guys have been in discussion, you've done it. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that people don't know. Why did you feel now you had to bring it to the forefront? And what do you feel people are going to really derive from this book more so than anything that's ever been written out there, James?
So as a process for me, I found it quite cathartic to walk through the conversations that we'd had before.
Yep.
And Peter Martin was really good at researching things. An ex-policeman, he liked his facts and figures, and there was nothing off the table when we talked about Denis or Stones. And things which might people believe to be true or facts, he knew or we knew that that was not the case. You know, you can find this information. Lots of myths out there. So we just decided, wouldn't it be good at some point in the future to write down all these facts, some of which people would find challenging to the belief they had, the myth they had about Denis, and then just put it out there. Put out the things that people haven't talked about.
Yeah.
And there's three main areas where we thought we could add value. The only point in writing a book is to add something that the readers don't already know.
Right.
And we thought there's three sections. Throwing. There's loads of stuff said about Denis and what he threw and how he threw. And there's facts here that we can add. There's his personal life. He was the first sort of sporting superstar. And loads of his life was documented in the press at the time in a way that nobody else's was, because he was living this lone wolf lifestyle, traveling the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the strength, which most people think the Denis Stones. So there was three areas there that we felt there's enough information that people did not know about. So we started off.
Okay, go ahead.
So it started off with the really boring stuff. The library work. Just went out and we got as many of his competition results as we could from the 19th century newspapers, found hundreds of them, and then tried to perform a statistical analysis across them. And actually, we were able to work out what he had thrown over 25 years, what he claimed he had thrown, his personal best that he claimed, and then graphed them all out.
Wow.
Because people say, oh, look, there's no way this man at that time could throw these distances. It's nonsense. It's myth. Well, maybe he could, maybe he couldn't. Let's go find out. So we've got these charts showing how he began, what his distances were, at the end, what he threw in America, Australia, Aboyne, Braemar. Charted them all out, put figures up there, let people decide. And that took months, to be honest. But we were able to, I would say, verify roughly what this man could actually throw. And I don't think I'd seen that elsewhere.
Right. So, that was stuff, obviously, that you had to go out and find and to, be able to put this down in the book. And, obviously, this was another piece that we didn't know about Donald Denis. Let me ask you this, though. What do you think? I mean, you know, everybody will say, you listen to some of these top lifters. I mean, I'm trying to think of his name. He was a famous Olympic lifter that we just lost not that long ago. Norm Shemansky. I remember reading article after article, and they're like, how do you get stronger overhead? And his comment every time was, keep going overhead heavier. You know, keep becoming a repetitious person and making the lift, obviously, get stronger, better execution, et cetera, et cetera. Back in Donald Denis's day, I mean, what do you think was his, besides obviously genetically, he had a predisposition to be a stone lifter. There's no doubt about it. Manual labor was very big, which we've lost over here quite a bit. Do you feel it was the manual labor, the drive in this gentleman? What do you think he was doing that he could excel not only in the Denny Stones, but become a traveling athlete in a time that I'm sure it was unheard of pretty much. So what do you think the attributes that he had and did that made him so good?
Well, on the physical side, he had the perfect beginning, a stonemason. So his father was a stonemason, and in turn he became one. So that is really heavy work day on day. So I think the physical side of things, he and many other men of his generation probably had that covered just by the nature of their work.
Yep.
But he made the transition from being a full-time stonemason to a full-time athlete. And there's not many guys who did that or who were in a position to do it. So the number of guys who were actually competing would be relatively small. And then with the constant practice that he undertook, he actually was pretty good at it. And they were also developing the throwing styles during his lifetime. And he, unlike many other people, was able to adapt.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. So you see that about Anderson, the Highland Games, the famous Highland Games guy, who had won the Scottish national title in game for many years. And then along comes Arthur Rowe and Jeff Capes.
Yep.
And they're lifting weights. They've got different ways of training. And Anderson, he adapted. And then he came back and he was able to compete with these guys. And I think Denny held that ability. He wasn't necessarily always the best.
Yeah.
But he was the best adapting to those who came along.
Yep.
Yeah, and very driven as well. He had a large family.
Yep.
And came from a large family. And basically a fair chunk of the money he earned went back to supporting those he'd left behind.
Absolutely.
And he had that, he never lost that drive to be successful and never forgot where he came from and was a lot of the time sending money back home to support those who he couldn't be with. So it was a job, an ongoing everyday job for him. He had to win. And yep. I think if you have to do something, like you said, you find out you can do it.
Yep. Yep. And you know something? You know, this is what I want to ask you in your research. Well, I want to ask you, it's just obviously with the research, but on a personal level, because I think I know what you're going to say, probably different from how I'm going to put it, but this. I feel today in sports and so many things, I think it's overemphasized, over analytical, because, you know, I like baseball. All right, I don't watch football here. I don't watch basketball. I don't like any of that stuff anymore at all. Forget all the politics in it. I just don't like it anymore. I still like hockey, and obviously when I can find the old WSM on CBS HD, my eyes will be glued to that till I fall asleep because it's usually on late at night. But even baseball now, New York Yankees are, being I live in New York, I like the Yankees. They obviously fired their coach, Joe Girardi. And one of the things that they said is they're going to go analytical more than pretty much the coach on the field. So you're going to have a general manager now who's never played any major league baseball telling you pretty much, calling down you from the booth on what you should do or who you should play. Now, to me, that's really going to take the game in a place I'm not really even interested in. But I guess that's from what they're talking now more than ever, the coaches mainly are to pat millionaires on the back and tell them how great they are when they feel bad. I'm not with any of that. I believe in good positive reinforcement, but, you know, I'm not going to be their counselor either. But the thing that I noticed about any of these great athletes, you know, even in the early, you know, 1900s too, and I'm sure with Donald Denny is this, a lot of the stuff they did was laborious work. They had to work in off seasons to survive because if you played organized sports at that level, you weren't making the millions on top of millions of dollars these men and women are making today. I think it built a stronger athlete, and I mean, we got to look at times, relevance of times, what they were back then to today, okay? It's a different style of athlete. But there's one thing I do believe, and I will take this with me all the time. I'll argue this with anybody. I don't believe today's athlete is even near mentally tough of a Donald Denny, Jack Dempsey, Babe Ruth, Rocky Marciano. Go down the line anywhere. There might be some throwbacks. There always are. I don't see it. I see more drama, more this, that, and the other thing, and it doesn't impress me at all. So I guess the question is, do you feel the laborious work Donald Denny did? Obviously, like you said, he had family to take care of, so he knew that he had to perform no matter what. So that creates a whole nother mental energy. But what do you think, James? I mean, do you think that's one of the things, even though we don't know the man, we never met the man, and from your research, do you feel that it was that lifestyle like that that propelled him to this greatness? Or what do you think in what you've done with this book you've written?
I'll give you an example of how I would say that life was different then and the mindset was different. So Denny had a close friend and a fellow athlete who he competed against called James Fleming. Mm-hmm. And the pair of them would tour together, compete together, and they're both at the top tier of their sport. They ended up having a series of well-paying competitions just between the pair of them for the public, throwing hammers to see who was the best. Denny came to America, or North America, toured around, and when he was gone, James Fleming won the Scottish Championship. So they're both champions at that time, and they realized they could make some money off champion versus champion throwing. So they have these stage contests, and they have to perform. They have to be fit and healthy to get paid. And then before the competition, they decide to have a wrestling match for money between them. And the day before, they're supposed to perform. And it's a full-on wrestling. You take the guy to the ground, and then you sort of choke him out.
Yep.
And only then have you won. So it's not wrestling. Get him to the ground and submit. You get him to the ground, and you keep following up.
Yep.
So I could never imagine anybody these days, the day before a big-paying competition, having a really high-risk wrestling match with your competitor.
Yep.
Any chance these guys had to make a few pound, they would definitely take it. And they went all out in many circumstances, knowing that if they got hurt, they'd still have to turn up the next day. It's just incredible. And there's instances where Denny, he seemed to have an awful lot of bad luck with horses.
Yeah.
Kicked with horses, smashed his knee falling off a horse and cart. So they get laid up with these terrible injuries, and while he's still injured, he's finding a different way to earn money.
Yeah.
It's just not the mindset that people would have this day if they're successful sportsmen. They preserve themselves.
Yep.
And after the first multi-million dollar or multi-million pound contract, it can't help but change you. If you've got 20 million pound in the bank, mm-hmm. you're not the same person who's got, you know, working full time and boxing at night. You can't possibly be the same man with the same ambitions.
No. And not only that, as we always say, and look, you don't want to see anybody get hurt. You want to see people stick around as long as they're productive and things like that. But, you know, I look at the athletes here. I mean, you know, they're treated like racehorses. But the thing is, you know, people don't realize the majority of sports, I mean, for some of them to last as long as they do, that's a freak. But in most of these high-end sports, if they make it 3 or 4 years, they're lucky. And that's the way it is. But, you know, I'm with you on that. I think the way to survive in so many things is to do a lot of different things. I mean, all right, these guys are out lifting over a combined weight of over 700 pounds in the Denny's, and then, you know, the day before they're killing each other wrestling. I mean, submitting, basically. We're going to choke you out. I mean, there aren't going to be many people even in today's world that would ever try anything like that. And I agree with you. The mindset, the approach, the way they trained, and I'm going to hit it again. I love when I just go out in the back of my house here where my gym is. I just like picking up a number of stones and moving them even 10 feet. And people say, well, what does that do? I said, well, there, I think in my driveway there's about 35 or 40 stones ranging from 50 pounds to 450. When you get to the point where you're even in the high twos to early threes, at that point, a lot of times I'm dragging them over. Because when you've moved already 20 stones at least, and you've carried every one, and I know 10 feet doesn't sound like a lot to people, but it is when you've got to get every stone over there. When you're at a 450-pound cement Husafell stone, you're not picking it up at that point. You're dragging that. And I got news for you. That gets damn heavy because you got to rock the stone back and forth to try to get it 10 feet over. So I believe, like you said, I think manual labor, and I will always say this because I'm a big proponent of it, I think manual labor makes you a better athlete, period. Stones, it probably gives you the edge, but I think it gives you a little bit of edge in everything you do. What do you think? I mean, what do you think with that, James?
Yeah, stones are definitely different. I'm finding I'm getting a bit older, so I find that the barbells are a bit harder for me than they used to be.
Yep.
Those well-worn grooves that you really desired when you're a powerlifter, you know, getting exactly that most perfect path, the bar path, that was perfect then, but now it hurts me.
Yeah.
Those ranges of motion just sore now.
Yeah.
But stones are a bit different. You can, even if you can't deadlift a massive weight, you can still lift really challenging stones.
Yep.
And you can prioritize the limbs that are still healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You can avoid the aches and pains in certain areas of your body. So I think stones, I don't want to say they're a demonstration of strength rather than building strength, but you've got far more variety with stone lifting.
Yeah.
You can have a sore wrist from whatever one day, and you'll still lift the stone, but you'll use your left arm a bit more than the right.
Yep.
So it gives you that a lot of flexibility with things like stones.
Yeah. That's why I'm such a believer in when anybody comes over here and we introduce sandbags in their life and they end up going to stones. The sandbag initially is going to be a little bit easier, I think, on your musculature and your bones and everything if you do things correctly. But it really sets you up to get into the next phase of things, whether it's heavier sandbags or to stone lift them. One thing I want to ask you, I've got a ton of stuff, and I know people are going to want to know this. When we see, obviously, the chains, we know the stone was drilled. I don't know if they cemented around it or like we do here with epoxy, and then obviously the big rings. How did that all come into fruition? Where did that all start once they found the stones? Because I believe, were they found in the water, or at one time they thought they lost them, I thought, and they found them again when they were doing work there? Could you give me a little information on that, if you would, James?
Yeah, so the stones themselves predate Donald Dinney and predate his father as well. So although the stones carry Donald's name now, they're much older than him.
Okay.
Just his feat of strength means that his name is associated with them. So these stones are on a bridge at Potarch.
Yep.
And basically they're there for, I don't know, about 100 years prior to Dinney. They had rings in them and they were used for tethering scaffolding.
Yeah.
During work on the bridge. Then during sort of World War II, they believe roughly they've lost the stones, or they're somewhere, but no one quite knows what's happening with them. And obviously, people are focused on other things during those war years. Along comes David Webster in the 50s, and having read about the stones themselves, sets about trying to locate them.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the riverbank is where he said he found them. One still had a ring within it.
Oh, wow.
The nearby one, the larger of the two, did not have a ring. So one of those rings is newer.
Mm-hmm.
The larger ring is a newer one. And then after David Webster recovered the stones in the 50s, he began promoting them round about Aberdeenshire, where he's from, and then Britain's Strongest Man and various other music hall competitions and challenges. He challenged people to lift and carry one of the stones at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, it's sort of come back into the consciousness of Highland Games athletes and strength athletes.
Yep.
And that's where they, so they're back in their original location. Both stones, both got rings in them, but the larger stone with the larger ring, it's a new one.
Yep.
Relatively new. Yeah, still 50 years old or something probably.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, that's a pretty good lasting 50 years. And then obviously, we can get into anything, but then we can talk about, from whatever everything I read, what it was 100 years later, Jack Shanks lifted the Denny Stones, correct?
Yeah, so that's an interesting area.
Yeah.
So once the Stones came back into people's consciousness in the 50s, there was a bit of a focus there on carrying one of the stones.
Okay.
So a single stone you take into a music hall, and then they try and get these guys to lift that stone and carry it for distance. Then roughly 60s, 70s, people were beginning to lift, or I'm aware of people beginning to lift two stones at a time. And then in the early 70s, yeah, Jack Shanks and another man called Sid Strachan, they ended up on the back of a flatbed truck and moving the stones for distance to try and replicate the feat of Donald Dinney.
Yep.
But prior to that, there was guys lifting them as well.
Okay.
I just don't know all their names.
Okay. Wow. That's an I got another question, but I want to ask you this because I asked Charlie this too, and I've been asking a lot of the stone lifters. Describe the people. I mean, all you do is see a picture. You guys, you know, are either going to lift the stones or not. What does it feel like? I mean, you walk up to them, obviously, like anybody, you know, the anticipation, the adrenaline's cooking, you know. Obviously, I know with Iceland, anybody that was there, you know, you're so focused on the stone, you pretty much don't even hear people at that point. But describe to our family here, what does it feel like, James, when you grab those and you have success? Is it just so quick? You don't realize it till you put them down, or do you feel this lift all the way through, and then obviously, as they say, the wind under the stone, and then you put them down? Just describe everybody what that feels like.
If I start with the older guys, the guys who lifted them in the 70s,
yeah,
because they have a different mindset.
Yep.
We met a lot of them at the gathering in August,
yeah,
2017.
Yep.
So there was Imla Shearer, Jim Splane, and Jack Shanks. Those guys are well known, and they lifted them all late 60s, early 70s.
Yep.
And those guys are different from us because they were pioneers. They didn't know the weights of the stones necessarily, and sometimes the first time they saw the stone was when they were there. So they didn't have the internet, nothing like that. They just knew these stones existed, maybe Swatcher, and they decided they wanted to lift them. So they were going in raw compared to us. They had no guys to speak to. So for them, there was a real sort of pioneer mindset. For us, the modern lifters, we seem to absolutely have to know exactly how much the weights of the stones are.
Yeah.
And often we'll train up in advance. So it's a slightly different mindset. You know what it's like when you walk up to a virgin stone, you go, I had no idea what this stone weighs.
Yep.
I don't know how hard it's going to be. So the stones are always different from training.
Yeah.
So if you get the loading pins and you've got the ring handles at home, they come up straight and they come up even. But when you're there with the stones, there's that fear.
Yeah.
There's that fear.
Yeah.
And what happens, tends to happen, is that you're pushing hard, you're pulling hard. The rear stone, which is often the smaller one, will come up.
Yep.
And you think, I've done it. And then you go, oh, I haven't done it. Not yet. The big one is still on the ground. This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you end up pulling for longer. So when you're training at home, it's like an Olympic lift. It's quick.
Yep.
Up and down.
Yep.
So you're pulling for what seems like an eternity. And the big stone, often at the front, will begin to wobble.
Yep.
And I found, it lifts off the ground and it rotates in your hand. For me, it rotates. I think it's anti-clockwise. And you feel your hand rotating. You think, oh, hold on. And you're shaking. You go, oh, I'm going to lock this thing out.
Yep.
I've come so far. You've only lifted it 3 inches. I've come so far. I can't put it down.
Yep.
It feels like a really long pull compared to the lift at home.
Yep.
And they're more alive. That big stone, it twists in your hand.
Oh, yeah.
So if, So if anybody's looking for training advice, when you're training at home, hold them at lockout for 2 or 3 seconds. Count one elephant, two yep. elephant, three elephant in your head.
Yep.
That'll save you some disappointment on the day.
Yeah, because you know something? It's such an experience, especially when all you guys are there. You know, you get to meet with people. I can't wait to meet Martin and everybody, you know, people that I've developed a friendship with, you know, through the radio and everything. But, you know, it's a long trip, and you really want to go and do your best. And you want to have success with everything. Maybe some stuff you will, maybe not. But to me, it's great, the camaraderie and everything, but you came over there for a purpose, too, and you really want to do that. And that's what I like about that. Like I said in the beginning of the show, it's either you get it or you don't, you know. And unfortunately, that might hurt a little bit on the plane ride home. But you know, you always got another shot again. I mean, there's no one, you know, there's no one stopping you from going and doing it again and again. You know, like when I talked to Bill Crawford. I mean, how many times has he been to Iceland? How many times has he been to Scotland? You know. People say, well, this might be my last time, but I can tell you this. I mean, being a guy that would like to be over there every year and hasn't been able to, you miss it. It's something that I think you're born with it. I really believe that. I'm not saying that there's no reason why you're not going to get interested in going over and do it, but we've talked about the whole DNA thing, James. Stone lifters are just, you know, Let's put it all together. Weightlifters, stone lifters, it all goes together because you try to use the best of everything to, obviously, if you're going to go over and lift the Denny's, or you're going to go lift an Inver or the Husafell or whatever. You do everything you feel that's going to strengthen everything enough to get what you want to get, your end result, which is to lift any stone you feel you want to. But I can understand that because I can remember, I think, reading one thing with Roger Davis a while back because he was on the 2008 tour. I will tell you this. Roger Davis, pound for pound, I think he's one of the strongest guys I've ever met in my life. I mean, I saw him wrestle stones where his forearms were literally bleeding. This guy was incredible. But I can remember reading something. It might have been in Milo. I don't think the first time, or maybe they got him to change it when he was doing it. He went to lift the Denny's, and I think he had the bigger Denny behind him and the lighter one in front, because I've heard two different schools of thought on it. Obviously, you do when you lift them, you have the bigger one in front, the lighter one in back, or is that how you go with it?
It is. It seems to be the more common way.
Yeah.
Big one to the front.
Yep.
Usually most guys are right-handed, so strong hand to the front with a big stone.
Yeah. Yep. But it's just very interesting, all that stuff. Also too, now, in your writing of the book and everything, what do you think, what was the one thing, if there's many too, that's fine, we can go as far as we want. What are some of the things that people are going to take away from this? Let's say we got a guy that's good lifter, maybe he's lifted a few stones, and he hears this show and says, you know what, I'm going over to Scotland next year, I'm going to contact Martin or anybody that might contact you. I know you're not in Scotland, but the point of the matter, and they're going to ask you, or they're going to say, how do I get there? Because I see a ton of people thanking Martin for directions and this and that and the other thing. What is it someone who really is on the fence but could be just nudged enough to go, what are they going to get out of this book that's going to say, you know what, James gave me the last kick, so to speak, and I'm going over there? What do you think?
Well, that's a tricky one. I suppose the only reason to travel across the world and lift a piece of rock that's 4,000 miles away as opposed to 10 miles away is to be part of history, is to lift the same stone that we know other men have lifted before you, and you're accepting the same challenge and nothing less than the same challenge that these other guys accepted. To be part of that, to be part of history is the only reason you would do it.
Yeah.
And even then, it's a bit mad.
Yeah, you know what? I think the same way you do, because one of the things we were talking about when we went for the Husafell, the first thing I thought about when I got out of the car and started walking up to the sheep pen, I said, I know a few guys have lifted this, but I said, whose DNA am I going to mix up with and take back with me? Because it's all laying in that stone. That's how I believe. Most people say probably not, but I do say probably so. And it is being part of history. See, the thing I love about all this stuff is this. Yeah, like you said, traveling 4,000 miles. Most people, like when I went to Iceland, obviously you're out of your mind. I'm not out of my mind. You know what it is? It's like I want to be part of something that has meaning to it, because I think there's so many things now that it's lost its luster for people. And I feel not only is it the camaraderie with gentlemen and ladies that have either done it or they're there with you today for the first time, but we share something. We have a common bond. And that's what I like. I don't have to be part of 500 people. I could be part of a group of two. But we have a commonality here. It's like you and I talking here, and when I talk to everybody else, you know, we've talked about this multiple times. It's like we could sit and talk for a whole night about this kind of stuff, whether it's the weights, the stones, the history, the love for it. Why did you get into it? What propels you still? Why do you want to do this to the day you can no longer breathe? And I know, you know, you start getting your 60s and 70s, I got it. You know, you're not going to be lifting probably 400-pound stones anymore. But who's to say you can't lift a 200-pounder anymore? What I'm saying is this stuff still has so much fluidity for the rest of your life. And I don't know many sports, and I don't even like calling this stuff sports because I don't like the whole notion of what sports are now. But this stuff we call physical culture, I'll call it that because that's what I believe it all is. Ask yourself this. How many sports out there can do what we can still do when we're in our 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s? You still see some older gents in their 90s still deadlifting over 100 pounds. What do you think? I mean, what is it out there? There's nothing I know of out there that we could still do. One of my biggest dreams, and people laugh all the time, I want to build a log cabin. I don't know if I'm going to go Wyoming, could be Montana. I don't know. I want to go more rustic like that, but I want that. And one of the things I want is a foundry in my backyard, in one of the garages where the weights and everything will be. Nothing big. But one of the things I'd like to do to the day I can't breathe is I want to be able to go out, heat metal, have big hammers, and pound the living life out of metal on an anvil. That's what I want to do. We talked about manual labor. I think doing things like that, I think that'll keep me quite vigorous until my day's coming. Comment on any of that stuff, James.
Yeah, look, I think these pursuits are lifelong.
Yeah.
And if you you start off looking up to people who've lifted these things or had these dreams, and then you follow with them, and then they retire, and then you take it on, and eventually you can't lift those things anymore, or you can't do these activities anymore.
Yeah.
But you still stay involved, mm-hmm, because it's inside you, it's part of your life, and then you go along and you watch the other guys lift the things that you used to be able to lift. It's a continuum,
mm-hmm,
and you're just briefly on that path. And once you can't do it anymore, then it's still enjoyable and fulfilling to be a spectator to it.
Yeah.
So some sports don't have that. It's good to compete in, but if you're not competing, it's just nothing there
for
you.
It's sterile. I know. Yeah.
But that journey to the stones and then watching someone lift them.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And you know that they've joined that same path of history that you were once on.
Yeah.
It's good. Even if you can't do it anymore, you can still be part of it. And sometimes that's enough.
It is, and it's so important. It really is, because I think men especially, they've got to have something that means something to them, something that is going to test their mettle their whole life. I know in America, a lot of that's gotten away from, but we are trying our very best to renew that again, to renew the faith in something bigger than you, something that's stronger than you, and giving you the ability to go and conquer it. That's what it's all about. You know.
Can I jump in there?
Yeah.
I've got something on my mind.
Yeah, anything you want, brother.
Yeah. So with other sports in particular, there are technological advancements that create distance between you and your time of performing that sport. So whether it be, I don't know much about ice hockey and stuff like that.
Yep.
But the technology changes. If you're a swimmer, you've got these special suits. If you're a runner, the sneakers change, the spikes change. Soccer players, the ball changes. But 100 years ago, it was a guy standing in a field, and it's still the same field, and it's still the same stone.
Yeah.
The only difference is you've got a pair of Adidas on,
yep.
and he's got his dress shoes. But apart from that, and maybe some chalk,
yeah.
you're doing the exact same feat of strength.
Yeah.
And I can't think of many other sports like that.
There's not.
You've got deadlift bars, power bars, even barbell sports changed a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Bumper plates, thin plates. It's very different.
Yeah.
So 20 years pass, and although you're still watching powerlifting, it's not the powerlifting that you did.
No.
Slightly different.
Yeah.
But standing in a field, it's pretty common. It's not going to change.
No. And, you know, even back when you said with the dress shoes and stuff like that, you know, I think back to, like, you look at a lot of the older pictures of even the, you know, the weightlifters, the physical culture guys. You'd see them do it. I remember pictures of Paul Anderson. He's in dress clothes, squatting 850 pounds. You know what I mean? Muscle Beach, even though I know we're talking 50s and stuff, it was even earlier than that. You look at a lot of the athletes, man, pressing huge weights. They looked like they came from Sunday church. You know what I mean? They were in suits and ties. I mean, you would never see that in today's world. They'd have to have their gear on and this, that, and the other thing. I'm going to ask you the question that I've been saving because we're getting near the end of the show. If Donald Dinney suddenly appeared again and James Graham was 5 feet away from him and he recognized him and couldn't believe there he was, it was a dream, what would you ask Donald Dinney if you had an opportunity? And I'm sure you'd probably want to ask him 5,000 questions. What's the question if you got one, if you can come up with just one or a few? What would you ask the gentleman right now, today in 2017?
Oh, wow. You've caught me off guard.
No. I don't mean to do that to you. But I think that, you know, I'd probably bend his ear to the point where his ear would fall off. But what is it? What would you like to ask him?
It would have to be, how did you walk those stones from one end of the bridge to the other?
Oh, yeah.
That's the million-dollar question that we all want to know the answer to. It'd have to be that.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Knowing him, he'd probably charge me a pound to tell me the answer.
Well, you got to remember, he was supporting a lot of people, James. You know?
That's right.
You can't get on a guy for trying. I mean, look, I think the ability, especially what you've done here, to talk about things, and especially things that you guys have talked about in private, so to speak, it's going to really shed, you know, you got three chapters to shed much more light on a guy that was so ahead of his time. And I don't know if people know that. I mean, it's very, very impressive. And I think this was a story with a lot of the older athletes. You know, like yourself said, they had people to take care of. They had families. They had extended families. And they understood what hard work was, and they did it. See, even if they complained, I'm sure, just to themselves. You don't hear the stuff like you do now where everything is this, that, and the other thing. Those are the type of people I like. Be very direct with what you do. Do what you do and do it the best you can do. And it'll all work out, because nothing is going to be easy. I don't care. I listen all the time, especially with businesses. You know, just because you're a multimillionaire doesn't mean you don't have problems. Things happen. You have to take care of it. The only thing is you have a little bit more equity to play with, all right? But how many people do we read about that are millionaires, they lose everything once, twice, come back every time? It's the same way with what any athlete, especially old school physical culture athlete, is they do different things because they have to. Most of them, I'm sure, want to, but they have underlying things outside of what they do. And when you do that, you have to be the best you can be in everything. And as James said, you know, these guys are injured and they're fighting the day before. They've got to do something big the next day. Different time, different place, but I will tell you this, I'd be much happier if they were around me than a lot of today's athletes. Not all athletes, but a lot of today's, because I think just the attitude, you know, as they say, I say it all the time, your attitude is contagious. It can either inspire people to greater things, or you can take and, you know, like they do, put a pin in a helium balloon and out it goes. James, summarize anything you like. If there's anything I forgot, put it out there. Go ahead.
Just to draw on that point you're saying about they had to compete and succeed even though there was other things in their life.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that comes across in this book. So I always had the impression that Donald Dinney's life was one big ascendancy, sporting and financial.
Yep.
And then at the end, he lost his money through financial catastrophe.
Yep.
Land prices dropped in Australia, and I thought that was it. Massive ascendancy, and just at the end, bit of hard luck. But in this book, you'll see that it's not that at all. It was a life of many, many struggles.
Yeah.
He had, because he had to run his own businesses and perform. So he ran his own affairs. So he would be arranging his own wrestling competitions or attending Highland Games, running a pub. And at the same time, he's in financial disputes with his employees.
Yep.
He's in a fair number of fights as well with people.
Yep.
He's suing people. He's being sued by people. His son sued him. It was just relentless problems for these, for him. And probably for guys of his era.
Sure.
And that was something that I hadn't seen before. You get to see behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So he's on the field. He, you know, throws a hammer 100 feet, wins that prize. And in the background, you happen to know that he's suing four people. He's had a fight. He's injured his knee. And the pub's not doing good business.
Yeah.
And he's still got to travel 10 hours in a horse and cart to the next venue. It's an incredible life.
Yeah.
I don't think, even when you try and when you write down the figures, I don't think it's hard to get a real feel for what it would be like to live that lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. But he lived it, and he definitely succeeded with it. And, you know, when you and I both know this, you put yourself out like that, there's going to be a lot coming your way no matter what. And it's going to be good and bad. And one of the things that I believe totally, your life is going to be a hell of a lot more successful with who you surround yourself with. You can never stop. There's always going to be inconvenience. There's always going to be people that aren't going to like you, going to sue you, you know, whatever. But on the flip side of the coin, it makes so much sense to me that you live your life the best you can. As I always say, be a steward of strength, be an inspiration, lead. And you know what? The rest is just going to fall into place. And that's the way it is. Because one thing I found especially is this. Sometimes the things that you don't like or you feel are dragging you down, one of the best things to do is just let it go. And eventually things are going to go the way you want. Because it's when you're constantly concentrating on the things that are negative in your life that keep happening. You know, we all know what you think about most keeps coming at you, and that's definitely a case that. But, you know, Donald Dinney was definitely way ahead of his time, like a lot of these great athletes. And I think it's great that you went out and you took the time, and I'm sure Peter Martin would have been pretty proud of what you've done. And, you know, you got a great guy with Martin. I can't say enough about him. I congratulate you on this, and it's been a pleasure to have you on and to get into this. It's been great, my friend.
Thanks for having me on. Hopefully the accent's not too tricky.
No.
I'm trying to speak slowly, but
no.
You never know.
No,
it plays away at times.
No, you sound fine. I mean, I'm not having one. No one's going to have a problem understanding what you're saying. What else you got, James? Anything else?
Let me think. have a quick look at the book, anything?
Yeah,
that... Oh, yeah, what I will say, is that you're trying to find something different, something that this book will have that other people will not have read about.
Yep.
There isn't. There is in this book an eyewitness account of Donald Dinney lifting the stones.
Oh, cool.
So that's, as far as I'm aware, never been in print before, and we found a reference to it in an article, and then I got in touch with the National Library of Scotland, and they've got an archival department who helped me out.
Yep.
And we were able to find some information about him actually being witnessed lifting the stones.
That's awesome. That, you know, that had to be a pretty exciting book to not only research, but to write, I'm sure, right? I mean, it had to really get you in a train of thought that, I mean, if you're not charged after doing something like that or reading it, you can't, you know, I look at it like you can't be alive at that point. You know, I mean, you know, that to me is be like, I'd have nights I couldn't sleep after I was writing stuff like that. You know, because it excites you. It makes you start thinking like, geez, maybe I'd like to go over and do this. You know, like I said before, like Steve Jack, certain things happen to you at certain times in your life, whether you realize it or not. Maybe it was something that you really needed at the time. But let me tell you, folks, to me, there's nothing like grabbing onto a stone, whether it's a river stone, you know, a Husafell, the Denny's, the Inver, et cetera, and just getting into it, you know, getting on it, you know, feel it. Feel that stone against your skin. Feel it biting right into your forearms because your forearms aren't tough enough yet to hold them. Things like that, you know, you get scraped up, you get a little cut up, you get a little bruised. You know what? No one ever died from that, and I guarantee you, you ask anybody that's done that, they'll tell you it's the best thing they ever did. Go ahead, James. Anything else?
If people read the book and enjoy it, and if one person decides that that's the motivation to go across to Scotland and lift the Dinney Stones, then that would be fantastic.
Yeah, it sure would. And I'm sure... once they get a hold of the book, that you're going to have somebody come on. I'm positive of that. That isn't even an afterthought. I think that maybe you get a handful. I think that would be great. James, where can they get the book? And anything else you want to add to it? And when you have that done, I will give out all my information. Just hang on the line if you would, please.
Sure. The easiest way to get the book, it's on Amazon. Amazon.com or Amazon.co.uk both carry it. I have a few copies left I can sign, but it literally is three or four. They'll be gone soon unless you're quick. Amazon is a place to go. I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, awesome. Okay, this is Motivation Muscle Streaming Radio 24/7. Don't forget, go out to FiorelloBarbellCo.com, Winner Circle, and the donate page. We appreciate anything in advance you would lend. And there's going to be more and more stuff coming, obviously, on the product page, which is going to be growing like crazy. Don't forget about the Manly page. That is going to be gigantic here. And I hope James and everybody else would write articles. We can put out the Dinney book. We can put a cover of it out there. I mean, we are out to promote manliness, and we want to see, like when I had pictures of my niece up today and Lawrence and John Patrick's daughters and everybody else that have sent video in of their kids doing stuff, this is what we want to do with this. It's very, very important, and remember, these kids are all coming up behind us. We don't want to see any of these traditions ever fade away, whether we're here or not. It's stuff that needs to be preserved. In fact, I didn't tell you, James, Bill Crawford had suggested, and he was looking at it a couple years ago, and I haven't talked to him about it lately, and Ryan Stewart, who was just on here, you know, they've been looking at a lot of North American stones, and they have located some, it looks like, in British Columbia, and I don't know where else, which is going to be very, and they have located them with some of the Native American tribes. So when I talk to Ryan, I'm very interested in this because I'd like to go and see if we could find a few stones here that, you know, maybe we could start a little tradition over here too, because I just think it's very important, and that could be a whole nother show we could talk about. But don't forget those two things. Also, go out to motivationmuscle.com/category/podcast. As I said, this show will be up tomorrow morning. So that'll be two James and I have done, and I hope in 2018, we'll be doing them quite a bit more. Very interesting stuff, and I'm going to do everything in my power to get over there next year, and we're going to do some massive filming. I want to interview some people, so I'd like to be over there for at least a month. It would be quite interesting, and I can't wait to meet all these gents and their wives and everybody else, because they've been dynamite to me, and I hope they feel the same way that I've been with them. It's very important. Don't forget about the sand dune. Matt Dahl, you want stabilization, balance, and rehab? 714-995-4500. Mention the word motivation. You get 10% off the product and free shipping in the USA. And when I come over to the UK and Iceland, I'm going to try to get at least take two of them with me and give them to different people that have been part of it. Also, too, I want to thank Douglas Graham, who's he's helped me out with quite a few things, and he didn't want me to really mention him, but we're going to get into that more and more. Douglas will be on next week with us, and I think we're going to be talking about a little bit of venture we've been doing. It's pretty interesting stuff, and I thank him for that, too. You can get Motivation Muscle on iTunes and Stitcher. Get that. Give us a 5-star review. We appreciate that. Also, AHA, AHA directory. You can get Motivation and Muscle in your car. If there's a show you like James and I to do, Fiorello Barbell at NICAP.R.com. If someone seeks you out in the gym or the concrete jungle, 5 words of inspiration can change your life. Try it with somebody that's down on their luck, and you'll put a smile right on their face. And I mean it. You never know what you could do for somebody with words. Also, too, as my mom said when we were kids, never be afraid to say hello to someone or give them a smile for that day. It's unbelievable. There's so many people out there, you see, they just look lonesome. And it doesn't hurt to be kind to somebody, believe me. Makes you more of a man, that's for sure. If you're going to lift it, bend it, break it, twist it, squat it, pull it, press it. If you're going to lift stones, turn them into dust. And the great Hoos of Steel Stone Crusher says here in blood red, domination, we are domination. We clear cut the path. We don't follow anyone's. Dominate, obliterate, and dent everything in your path. No one ever clip our balls. And as Russell Fur says, who's been listening to the show from the beginning, when I hear your show, I swear there's testosterone dripping out of my speakers. That'll be the course forever here, and it'll probably be more and more aggression as we keep going. It is going to be served big time, and that's what we want here, and we want to make a lasting impression that's going to have you go out and help others with solutions like we're doing here. It's a big family of people that care. Also, too, Frank Klein, my greatest business marketing professor, repetition, repetition, repetition. My dad, be a leader, not a follower. Be a leader, not a follower. John Ridge, my greatest chiropractor, who was like a father figure, who came long after my pop passed away. He'd walk every patient to the door and say, keep smiling. Say that to yourself on your worst day. I guarantee you'll put a smile right across your face. We lost John 3 years ago to cancer this past August, and I miss John like you would not believe. I miss Friday afternoons going over there. He was one of the greatest men I've ever met in my life. Good, good person, let me tell you. Be a steward of strength. Don't stand on the side of the road and watch the world go by. Tell 100 or more of your friends we're coming, because we're not going to kick your door and we'll blow the roof right off your house. Join the family. Join our revolution, because I'm telling you, in the next 30 years of your life is going to be the best it's ever been with the people that are involved, with myself and the show and everything, and I appreciate that from everybody, believe me. The great Les Brown says, you all have greatness in you. We take it 2 steps further. We got your back, and we believe in you, and I don't know many people in today's world that would put that out there like that. It's very important. Men, women, take good care of yourselves. Love one another. Be good examples out there and stick with us forever. You need us, and we need you, and we appreciate that. James, I thank you for everything. The very interesting show. I can't wait to read the book, and I hope all of our listeners will jump on board, buy the book, read it, contact you, and I hope they tell you we're heading out to Scotland next year. So thanks for being on, my friend.
No, pleasure's all mine. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you're always welcome here, and that's what we want to do. We educate and we teach people, and we love it. We hope they all join in. It's a great time. So, for James Graham, this is Eric Fiorello. Have a great weekend, everybody. Like I said, the show will be up tomorrow. And remember, life is asking from you to do some great things. Go out and do it. Be a winner. Be a champion like I know all you are. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.